Welcome to a very special inaugural episode of the War Nerd Podcast, where we talk all things games, guns, gear, tactics, technology, and conflict with guests from across the gaming, defense, and firearms industries. I'm the host, Controlled Pairs, and today we are joined by my good friend, Karma Cut, who just passed 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. Here we go. Karma Cut, what's up, my guy?
Hello, hello.
I'm happy
to be here.
Yeah, dude. I'm legitimately excited to have you here for the, what is the inaugural episode of the War Nerd Podcast. Who would have thought that the MilSim gaming and firearms and gear community needed any more podcasts?
I know, right? It's great, though. It's great. I love doing podcasts. It's just so much time, and I'm so glad to see like someone else also take up, you know, more of the podcast scene for this genre, just because specifically when it comes to gaming, I don't necessarily think there's any more MilSim or tactical gaming podcasts anymore. Not really. So it's cool to see that you're starting it up. And I know you've got like a lot of experience, and I always love getting your feedback and talking to you about these, you know, topics and ideas and stuff. So happy to see what comes out of this podcast of yours.
I am too, man. And it like the idea was, it felt like just a necessity. It wasn't like one. I enjoy the podcast thing. I really do. I like taking the time to talk to friends and people that I share interest with about like a wide range of subjects. But there definitely does seem to be like a void. And then more than that, I just found that I wasn't taking the time to talk to my friends in like really deep and meaningful ways about this sort of stuff. And so like stopping once a month to have conversations like this, I think there's value in it. And I'm grateful that you're the first dude to, you know, get in the limelight and join me. I'm sure that we've got many months ahead of us of, you know, of other guests, but there's no one, in my opinion, better to start us off here than you. Because, you've been a mentor to me, believe it or not, for, I don't know, man, like I don't know, 2 years or something like that. Now we've had the privilege of playing some games together, talking content creation and service and fitness and just like this wide range of stuff. Speaking of your content creation side of things, I saw you creeping up on 500K on YouTube. How do you feel about that milestone?
Yeah, it's actually funny. There's a couple things I want to touch on there, but yeah, it's we actually hit 500K like today. I was not prepared at all. I don't have anything special planned. Dude. It's just been like you said, like it's hard to find time these days, especially like the world's gotten a little bit crazy. And then especially with Q4 right here, we've got so much content, so many updates, so many games popping out. So just even finding the time, like you said, to chat with other content creators or friends, it's hard. It's hard to find that time these days. And then going back to the mentorship thing, it's funny that you mentioned that because I know I look to you also for mentorship with things, you know, unrelated to gaming, whether that's, you know, life guidance or, you know, fitness specifically. It's really cool that, you know, we can share and collaborate in different ways outside of just, you know, making content and just talking to one another.
Yeah, I share that that appreciation, and it's been awesome to get to know you better over the last, you know, months and years. And I think we got a pretty cool little internet friendship here. Hopefully we get to hang out in the actual planet Earth at some point in the future. Dude, but the 500K thing, like these milestones, they're weird, right? Because I feel like as content creators, we're constantly chasing like that next big number. We're constantly like in pursuit of whatever that next goal might be. But there's something about like when you reach it, like it's joy, it's exciting, it's amazing. But at some point it's like it's a number. But and there's like a certain grind to what we do that isn't necessary. Like you never hit that magic number and you're like, okay, I'm good now. Like that, at least that I've,
yeah.
How do you feel about that? Do you find a similar sensation?
It's definitely, so in my mind, when it comes to like my journey, at least in my perspective as a content creator and like coming up through the numbers, there's, I feel like it breaks down into different mindsets for different zones, I guess you could say. So like, I remember the first, like when you're smaller, it matters so much more, right? That first 100 subs, the first 1,000 subs, the first 10,000, right? And I remember like a lot, and I think I'm pretty sure a lot of content creators, yourself and just other aspiring content creators can agree that like that first little bit up to about, I'd say maybe 50K, it's exciting. It's also scary because you're looking up at the people before you and you're like, damn, I got to do this. I got to hit 10,000 people 10 more times than 100,000 subscribers. It's daunting but exciting because you're watching the progress, and the progress is it's really meaningful at that level.
Yeah.
But it's the hill that you're looking at that you have to climb can be daunting. So I remember just the first, I'd say about 100K subscribers. That was the first real milestone where it's like, okay, I there's definitely something here. It's not just, you know, a flash in the pan. It's something that I can stick with. And then I remember about getting to, I think maybe it was 300 or 400K where I finally got, it was very memorable. It was finally like a sense of relief of like, okay, I've solidified some kind of ground for myself within this niche, and it's more stable. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. Is like it does become a number to a certain point in time, but I feel like I've established myself, and I don't have to worry. Oh God, is everything going to disappear tomorrow?
Yeah.
Because I know, yeah, everyone, all the content creators feel that at some point in time, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's something that I admire about full-time creators is you don't have like a safety net. You know, I, for better or worse, you know, have the benefit of a full-time job, and content creation isn't my, you know, primary source of income, but not to say it doesn't help, of course. But I couldn't imagine, you know, living video to video, you know, ad deal to ad deal, and just counting on my own hard work, effort, and the all elusive, you know, algorithm to feed me, like literally, that had to be a huge leap of faith. When did you decide to make that leap, and kind of what was that like?
So I'm extremely fortunate to have grown up in a solid family. I didn't have any, you know, I realize just now looking back is how lucky I was to just not have any problems growing up, like any financial issues or you know, parents with health problems, or growing up in a really, you know, a good place. Growing up with that, just having that stable ground is something that I think a lot of people take for granted or don't think about. And I just realized like having that stable ground and just being able to take that chance was something that was really big for me, because I remember I was going through college and I got squad and I started making videos, and I'll look back every now and then at like the very early videos of what I was making. And I was getting like maybe 100 views, maybe 500 views, but I made the decision to go really deep into this probably around that level, just because I think more than anything, it was a lack of desire to do anything else.
Yeah.
And just knowing that like I enjoyed video games, I wanted to create stuff to share with people, and being able to take that leap and having that, I don't know if you want to call it privilege or that space to do it, it helped a lot. It definitely helped a lot. And I know that a lot of people who try to get into content creation, or just people in general around the world, aren't as fortunate. But it was really, really, I always say it's luck, because this could have gone so many other ways, but I truly did put my ass against, you know, a rock and a hard place, or like backed up against a wall, because I didn't have a backup plan, like yeah. You said. So there's a pro and a con,
yeah.
Because I put everything I had into it, because I didn't really have the desire to do anything else. I didn't have the drive or aspirations or, you know, ambition for anything. You know, like I was going to college, I was just going through the motions. So it was definitely daunting at first, but I just, some part of me knew that like I had to take this step, and win, lose, or draw, like I at least would know that I tried. So it was rough in the beginning, and I'm very fortunate to have the family that I had and
sure.
the you know, upbringing that I had. But yeah, I started very early as like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
To answer your question, it was like, it wasn't like I didn't do it part-time and then jumped into it. I was pretty much like, I'm going to take a year off college and I'm just going to go.
Yeah. There's like a couple things there that I really relate to. One is that you just have to love it, right? Like with anything you do in life, if you're not passionate about it, then you're going to half-ass it and you're going to fail. So I've found that like professionally, I feel that way as a father and as a husband, I feel that way. Certainly in content creation, I feel that way. Like if you don't absolutely love what you're doing and it becomes a grind, or if you, you know, lose that fire, then at that point it's not worth doing. But at the same time, if you have that passion, you can move mountains. And it's also possible that you have that passion, you grind forever and you fail. Like that's certainly, mm-hmm. that's certainly possible too. But you have to love it, and you have to have the drive, and you have to, you know, you have to go all in for better or worse. And the other piece is like the privilege piece. That's definitely part of it, right? Like, it's like part luck, it's part hard work, and it's part like you have to have the sure footing to be able to take the leap. And that's not to say you can't, you know, come from nothing and become great by any means. But I feel like it's certainly true that, you know, everyone starts at different places in life, and, you know, starting at certain places gives you better opportunity, but you can't take advantage of that opportunity without working your ass off, loving what you do, and just being incredibly driven. And you've definitely shown the propensity to do that, especially, you know, having just hit 500K. That's a huge milestone. I guess the last thing that I really kind of appreciated was the leap of faith, kind of the way you described that, and kind of knowing early on, like you were going all in. In my family, like literally like my immediate family, like my wife and kids, we have a saying. Well, I say we have a saying, it's from, you know, ancient history. We say burn the ships whenever we go all in on something, which is a phrase you might be familiar with. When Cortez landed in the New World, you know, his soldiers staring off into the distance were like, holy shit, we're committed here. This is looking pretty dangerous, boss. Like, how about we just pack it up and head home? Like, they lost heart essentially. And the legend goes that he ordered them to burn the ships and march forward. So it's like,
right,
when there's no plan B, plan A looks really good.
Yeah, it's I just needed to know that I had tried. Like that was the main thing. It was just something that I felt. And it's funny because when you look, it does take a ton of work. And when you look back or you look at current creators right now, you think, oh, you know, they just caught a ride and or caught a wave and rode it all the way to where they are now. But if you look at a lot of content creators at their very, very start, a lot of them just do it. And they do it for years and it doesn't get traction, but they're still doing it. And then eventually they catch a wave or something. Yeah, Very few content creators come up out of nowhere and are just like with it. And they're you know, on top of everything. And it's going perfectly. It's a grind. And I think that goes for a lot of artists in general, whether it's, you know, actors or, you know, people in the music industry. A lot of it is just going through, I guess, the suck and just like sticking it out and not quitting.
Jesus.
And then eventually getting that point. But it's definitely it takes a lot of effort, a lot of passion, like you said, because you have to have. You can't be chasing money. You can't be chasing fame at that start because you're not going to get it. You just have to do it because you enjoy doing it. And it's definitely risky, right? Because not everyone ends up pulling it off. But I think there's something that you've said about just doing it and not giving up so long as you enjoy it. And just, it's so important that you find your passion and you just continue to keep it and not let anything discourage you, whether it's, you know, your family, because I had a ton of pushback from family, or, you know, other people. It's you got to find that internal strength of what you want to do and make that decision, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I relate to that so much. I feel like I started making videos. I mean, my YouTube channel is extremely old. Like I released an Arma 3 beta video in like 2012 or 13 or something like that. And then I kind of iterated over and over again. I'd make, you know, 10 or 12 videos over the course of a couple months. And then I'd take a break for 4 or 5 months or 6 months or a year. And I'd come back and I'd kind of do it again. And then I finally was like, all right, I'm going to take this seriously. And I spent like 6 months making a postscriptum video like damn near every week, you know, and it's this small game, platoon wide tactical shooter, you know it well, of course, but not a big game. And it's hard to grow a big audience on a small game. It just is. And if people aren't searching for it, that's just the way it is. And then I stumbled into Door Kickers 2 almost like on accident, and I had a couple videos like blow up super early. And I was like, whoa, I have, you know, a degree of expertise on this specific subject that is rare in the gaming space. And like, it was like magic that sort of synergized with my passion for gaming, my passion for tactics, my passion for doctrine and teaching and explaining, and into something where like, it was very clear that I naturally fell into that niche. My content's kind of taken that flavor ever since. For you, I feel like it was Squad. Is that right? Is that kind of where you first caught, you know, momentum?
Yeah, so I started with Arma, and it's so funny. Like, it's just the way the world works is like, I heard about Squad when I was playing Arma 3 Wasteland, and just I had a group of friends I was playing with, and one of them was like, Karma, you should check out this game that's on Kickstarter or whatever. It's called Squad. It's like this platoon shooter. I was like, I'm not gonna get that game. I was like, I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah.
So I just didn't buy it, and then the game came around to open beta, and that friend gifted me, his name is Termy, that friend gifted me Squad. Yeah. And it's just crazy how like I can't, it's just so hard to conceptualize like the chain of events that lead you to your current position and just how
yeah.
A lot of it's luck, a lot of it's determination, a lot of it's, you know, making sure that you're staying on top of your stuff, but it's just it's wild how life turns out.
God, what a life-changing, like, simple act by your friend to just, like, buy you a video game that literally changed your life. That's crazy, mm-hmm. man. And, like, just a simple act of generosity. It's good to be good to people, you know, and hook them up with stuff like that when you can, because you never know how it turns out, right?
Yeah, no, honestly. Give it to me. Yeah, I would not be in this position at all. So it's legit.
Dude, okay. Well, let's talk about some of your more recent content. I've been following closely your passion that you use to speak about Battlefield 2042. What's going on there?
So going back to like my style of content, I guess, from that last question too, is like, I think the most important thing to me that I love is, and I love creating or like sharing, is really immersive, organic moments, like nothing scripted, but just solid teamwork, solid gameplay that looks fun. And so when we talk about Battlefield 2042 specifically, like the main game, I think it's got some work. It needs some work,
yeah.
But the potential there to create those moments that, you know, sparked my passion for Squad, those cinematic organic moments where you're playing the game and it just feels like a movie, or it feels like really immersive and extremely intense. I think there's still a lot of potential with 2042 to create those kind of scenarios, just because the editor is baked into the game, and that is I think the main thing that a lot of people are eyeing and where a lot of the potential in that game is. We're just gonna see over the next, I don't know, weeks or months how much DICE decides to push it. Mm-hmm. Have you tried 2042?
So I played the beta, and I think I've launched the core game like once or twice now. I can't say that I've invested enough time to like render a legitimate opinion beyond just echoing, you know, what I've seen on social media with some of the frustrations in performance and just some like major features that are absent and some serious balance issues. I'm disappointed, man, because I mean, like, I grew up on the Battlefield franchise, like I feel like a lot of us did, you know, early on. I was still pretty young, but I played like Battlefield 1942 on a 56K modem, you know, like just frame by frame, literally went hard, like very deep into Battlefield Bad Company and Battlefield Bad Company 2, Battlefield Vietnam. So like I'm a veteran of the franchise. And when I saw the marketing campaign for 2042, like it was hitting all of the right stuff. Like they put the loop zook into it. And I mean, like, there's just so many moments, exactly what you just described. Like they sold a magic game that produced those only in Battlefield organic, cinematic, teamwork driven moments that you just described. And then I feel like the product that they released is not out of the box prepared to offer that, you know, that promise. And so they set expectations extraordinarily high. And it seems as though they've delivered a product that does not meet them. So it might be an okay video game, but it's not the video game that they said they were going to publish.
Yeah, it's got like my main issues with the game are not even that like, oh, it's not fun, or, you know, this is unbalanced. There are like just some bugs and just actual like features and functions that do not work as intended, that are just, it's so sad to see that this is becoming the standard for a lot of AAA titles, is that the marketing budget and you know, the amount of effort that goes into actually marketing the game. I don't know if it's just extremely easy to make these trailers now, or if it's just there's so much money being pumped into them. But all, like, there's so many AAA shooters like that are just, they market the crap out of them, and the CGI looks great, the trailers look good, right? But then the games just fall completely short. And so it's disheartening to see that is where AAA shooters are going right now, just because, like, even within our niche, there isn't really anything new. Battlefield 2042 was the one thing that was, I think, kind of like the gleaming hope of tactical shooters for the future, just because we could turn it into that.
Sure.
I'm trying to think, there's OHD that's in development, and that's definitely got some potential, but I'm trying to think of the next tactical shooter that's on the horizon, or any major updates to our current games that we play. And it's Squad is puttered to a standstill almost. Postscriptum's on its last legs. Hell Let Loose is actually doing kind of well.
It is.
And Sandstorm is, you know, it's there. It's a pillar. It's not really going anywhere. But I I think I have a I like to be on the bleeding edge of things. I like to see innovation. I like to see things constantly, you know, to be excited for. And it's just, it's strange having that hype or that hope for 2042 and Portal and then getting there. And it's kind of a letdown and not really having a backup to really look forward to, especially since you and I both have, you know, interest as far as content creation and, you know, growing the channel.
Yeah, it's weird how, like, the lifeblood of, you know, your online presence becomes the content that you can make. And at some point, like, people aren't going to search or, you know, be as interested in the games that we're currently playing because they age and it's a natural life cycle of any game. But when the industry isn't producing things that, you know, replace the stuff that we are playing, it creates, like, a void, for lack of a better term. I agree with your assessment of, like, the landscape broadly. And I feel like the next game that takes off, you know, they typically, you know, they tend to be kind of platoon-wide tactical shooters, typically have a PvP flavor to them, typically have, you know, a moderate to high graphical fidelity with seamless features. Like, we kind of know what the playbook looks like in an S-tier platoon-wide tactical shooter that hits it big, a la Squad, you know, a la Hell Let Loose. But none of those, with the exception of Operation Harsh Doorstop, which is much... You know, as I adore Blue, I still think it's going to be a niche project. It's going to have a larger audience because it's going to be free to play and have a huge modding scene, but it's still in the niche. It's not going to go as wide as some of these bigger titles, and that's totally okay. It's still a phenomenal project that I'm really excited to get involved with as it goes live. But I agree that it looks barren. There's some, like, co-op stuff that looks kind of interesting on the horizon. 6 Days in Fallujah looks pretty cool. There's all sorts of, you know, politically charged commentary associated with that one. So we'll see how it goes. I just got an update from the developers there that its release got pushed to 2022. Mm-hmm. No surprise there. It takes a long time to make games and they typically overpromise early. Yeah, I mean, like, Ready or Not, you know, God, who knows? Ready or Never, probably. I've lost all hope for that title ever being published in a usable, workable state. But yeah, it's looking rough out there, man. It's looking rough.
Yeah, it's I think the thing that gets me the most is, like, I don't feel like there's ever going to be a Squad 2 just from, like, knowing the state of the dev team and where, like, a lot of that stuff is gone. Hell Let Loose, I think, has the most potential because I think they have that whole Pacific theater they want to work on. But, like, I want to see what the next contemporary platoon shooter is going to look like, because I think there's a lot of glaring problems that after you play round after round of Squad, right, it's just like, okay, I kind of figured this out, or this is still a problem from a year ago. And it's just like, you just get tired. Like, the game ages, sure, like you said, if it's not constantly, you know, being tinkered with or worked on. And you know, you get all the comments, oh, you just go play PR. It's like, yeah, all right, yes, we could go back and play PR, but I don't want to play something that looks like it can play on my Nintendo 64. Yeah. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. That's why Battlefield was just such, it was such a letdown, because I did have hopes for the Portal mode, because if we could get the, you know, granular control, we could have a high fidelity, you know, essentially PR2, because it's, you know, it's Battlefield, and we've reshaped it and remodded it for the current day and age. So God knows what's going to come next. It's gotten to the point where I think we've had that huge cycle of releases, you know, Postscriptum, Squad, sure, Hell Let Loose, Sandstorm, Zero Hour, all these. We're going to be entering a stage or an era of modded content for a solid while here, where a lot of the new and bleeding, you know, fun tactical shooter experiences are going to be community made and not by major, you know, not major, but even indie developers, just because that's how things feel on the, you know, within the industry right now.
Sure.
So it's exciting. It's a little like this whole, if I had to explain content creation as a whole, it's exciting and terrifying at the same time. It's an emotional roller coaster. Yeah, because we're constantly trying to figure out the solution to these problems, and sometimes it leads to, like, really cool, innovative, you know, community made things. But it's just it's the Wild West out here.
It is, man, and it's not looking particularly like it's going to thrive at the moment. There are a couple things on the horizon that I'm excited about. What's your thoughts on this upcoming Ground Branch update? I know you kind of, like, poured your soul into that one there for a few months, and it looks like we're about to get a nice update.
Yeah, I mean, the Ground Branch is a fantastic game, and they always do like amazing updates, and it's always a ton of fun. The problem with Ground Branch is just it's the dev cycle is just it's just a little it's not a little it's very slow.
It's very slow.
It's very slow. But it is one of the games that, like, when you get a good group of guys or when that update hits, like, I'm going to be playing the crap out of Ground Branch and, like, hosting PvP lobbies and stuff because it is a unique experience. You can't, there's nothing like Ground Branch PvP anywhere. Like, 0 hour, it kind of gets a little close, but Ground Branch just nails CQB and the whole, you know, being having to work, you know, non-verbally and just being able to signal with your guys and work through problems like in real time, and the controls feel fluid, the gunplay feels fluid. It's just, oh god, I sometimes I wish I could take all these tiny parts from all the tactical shooters that we have now and just mesh them together.
Like,
but
oh my god, how crazy is it? There's so much talent in the way of developers and like 3D modelers across the industry, and a ton of that talent in our niche is focused on mods and these little indie games. Like, if we could just have one king of the nerds bring all of this talent together to design the super game, like, we'd be there. And I realize Blue Drake is actively doing exactly that right now, so like, maybe Operation Harsh Doorstop, you know, is our savior. But I completely share that. Like, I look at, you know what some of these modders are doing to SWAT 4. Like, the game is a decade plus old, and they still make it extremely exciting and extremely fun. You have this tiny developer from, you know, developer team from Bangladesh making 0 hour. You've got, you know, Blackfoot, which is another tiny studio, basically, you know, bootstrapping contractors to, you know, throw animation overhauls into their release build. And that's what's going to come out of the 1032 update. So, like, all of these examples of these, like, tiny little teams bootstrapping their way to success, but creating content that is extremely feature rich. Like, it has all of those little things that we want that get missed in every single AAA title. And the focus is always, you know, gameplay first, experience first. It's not marketing heavy. It's not flashy. It's about delivering fun and quality and, like, immersion, the things that we're super passionate about. There just doesn't seem to be, like, a centralized, coordinated, motivated, well-led way forward to a more high-quality game with a bigger scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so funny because I'll play certain games and I'm like, I love Ground Branch and how it plays, but I want the AI from 0 hour, right? Or you know, or I want the VoIP system from Squad in Escape from Tarkov, or I want like the gunplay from Escape from Tarkov. Like, there's all these games do like a couple things really, really well, and then completely some of them just completely fail on a couple fronts that just makes the game like, it's still a good game, but it could be amazing. Sure. Like, there's so many things with all these different games that if you just switched them around with the other games or combined them, like, you would have, as you said, the super tactical shooter.
Yeah, we're almost there. Maybe in our lifetime, or maybe at some point, you know, you and Drewski just have to grab the range and make this thing happen, you know?
Maybe, we'll see.
The another follow-up here is something we kind of hadn't hit on too much is virtual reality. You and I have played some Onward together. It's been a little while, but we had a good time doing it. And what are your thoughts on VR right now? Have you played recently? Do you have any thoughts on its, you know, near or long-term future? Do you think it has a place in the future of gaming, be it casual or otherwise?
I think, so it's funny we were talking about VR, because I literally just, not literally just, but I just got the, what's the Steam one? Is it the Vive?
The Index?
The Index. There we go. Oh, see, that shows you how much I know about VR. I upgraded from the Rift to the Index, and I can there's definitely an improvement there. Like, with the technology is getting there, but I think it's still too expensive. But I think the major thing is just space, is just having the room to do that. I don't know. Maybe it's because I live in LA and like the apartments here are freaking, you know, the size of a shoebox, but it's very hard to find the space in the room to, you know, have that full on immersive experience without walking into things or punching the wall, or, you know, all the problems that take you immediately out of that VR immersion. There's so many times where I've like knocked my head into the wall, or like I'll you know, kick something over, or I'll stub my toe and some stuff like that. Like, it's just, There's so much potential with it, especially when you go to like those really, I don't know if you've ever done this, but those really tailored experiences that are like in actual storefronts or you know, actual locations that you have a full-on experience that have rooms specifically built to them.
Now,
those are
I've seen those. I've never done one, but that's definitely like it's on my to-do list.
Yeah, if you get that, but so, like the main thing is space, is just having the space to move around and be able to do that. But like you can't just give your consumer space. You know? Yeah. It's like you can't just get more room, buy bigger. It's just hard to do that. So I don't know what the solution is. Maybe someone will make an extremely affordable, you know, multi-directional treadmill. That's like $10 or something. Sure. I don't know how they're going to solve the space problem.
It's a dichotomy because it's like you just spoke to it. You live in LA where, you know, your most like affluent, your most tech savvy population are going to live in city centers where space is finite and hard to come by. So it's like the same people who are going to be interested in your product are going to be the same people who are unable to use it because they live in, you know, tiny apartments that they pay, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 a month for. Like they can't buy a spare bedroom and not put anything in it to play VR. So I had not considered that, you know, living in a single family home and being very much just like full on dad mode. But that's I'd never considered that as a limiting factor. I kind of always thought that the barrier to entry was that it's just weird. Like it's still kind of in the early adoption phase. And you know, as seamless as it seems to me now when I put on a VR headset, there's so many people in our population who just haven't done it. And I feel like I just had family in town not long ago. And I had my mom put on an Oculus for the first time. You know, she's in her 50s and she puts this thing on. And just like we all are the first time you get in VR, she's just completely floored, like completely blown away that this can even exist. And I feel like if you gave that kind of first experience in VR to more people, you'd have a lot more adoption. But space is a limiting factor and one that I definitely had not considered. Is there any VR games that you're playing right now or considering playing with your new Index?
I would love to play more Onward, like PvP and stuff like that. And even Fast and Low and that stuff is a great time. And the main reason I got the Index was because I was getting absolutely nauseous with the frame rate on the Rift S.
Really?
Yeah. And we played that one mission and I was like, I was going to puke.
We're going up the stairs, turning around, and
I'm like, I'm going to freaking puke because it's happening so fast. And it's you got like verticality to it all. And I'm just losing myself in it all. Yeah. But I think going back to like, it is a unique experience that you cannot get anywhere else, like as you said. But I think one of the other things is like when you think, okay, I'm going to buy a VR headset. What game are you going to play? Like, there's no like Call of Duty of VR. You know, there's no one game that's like, I need to get VR to play this one game because this one game can be played all the time and is absolutely like a game that you can just pour hours and hours and hours and hours into. I'm sure there are some people out there who pour like thousands of hours into a VR game, but like it's hard for me to think in my mind, like what is that game that justifies the purchase? I think for a lot of people, the closest thing is probably Beat Saber. Like, and that's probably the one thing that are like, oh,
it's got like some replayability.
Yeah, and it's something you can pour hours and hours into. But a lot of the games feel like tech demos, right? A lot of the first person shooters, at least, they feel like it's janky. It's the things don't necessarily look nice. Maybe the textures are wrong. Maybe maybe a game is downgraded their graphics to fit on a certain platform. You know,
there's
a whole bunch of problems with all the games. But the experience is amazing. I think the way forward for VR, for better or worse, and I think we've seen this or I've heard of this like over the past couple of years, is VR arcades in real world. It's not necessarily as niche of an experience as some of the like purpose built, you know, experiences. But I know a couple people that have gone and actually opened up VR arcades because that's the experience that you really can get right now. It's like, I don't know anyone that's playing VR every day, all the time, you know, endlessly. It's like, I'll go and I'll play for maybe a couple hours and then I'll put it away for a week. It's like at that point, going to a VR arcade and, you know, paying for one night for the space and to use all the tech without having to make that initial purchase makes a lot of sense. So I don't know if that's going to be the future where you see a whole bunch of VR arcades open up, But I think the at home thing, there's like, yeah, we got to get over the, we got, there's got to be a good game that you can pour hours into without getting nauseous. And you got to solve the space problem. And then you also got to solve the price point.
Yeah.
I feel like some of these things are being fixed.
Two things come to mind there. Like the first is that the, whatever problem we have on traditional gaming systems with, you know, niche developing teams and indie studios struggling to produce high quality games, whatever that problem is amplified tenfold in VR, especially in our niche. When you look at games like Fast and Low, and even games like Onward, Downpour recently bought out by Oculus. Like that is a major studio in the VR market, but it's still like a pretty much a tiny studio. It's not a huge game. There's not a ton of concurrent players. And that's the biggest tactical, you know, milsim shooter on the platform, period. And so there's like a talent issue. There's a production issue. There's certainly a space issue. That doesn't change the fact that I love it. And I hope that it's the future because it's my preferred way to experience immersion in tactical shooters. And I see a just a limitless potential there. And the second thing that came to mind was the Quest 2. So I've used the Quest 2 not to game as much. I mean, I've used it to sim. I don't know if you if we talked at all about my getting my hands on the Chimera XR CQB training platform. So I use the Quest 2 for that thing. That program, that's, we can talk that in a second, but that was phenomenal, and hopefully I get another couple reps on it in the next few months. But the Quest 2 was fascinating to me. I think Quest and Oculus get a lot of hate because of the association with Facebook. Some of that's changing, you know, recently with the adoption of the Meta label and kind of cutting ties, at least from an account management standpoint, with Facebook proper. But the Quest is a reasonably priced wireless headset that can operate by itself or be, you know, linked via AirLink to a gaming PC. So it still gives you access to PC VR. And it's not perfect, but I was impressed with it, with my limited interaction with it. And if it has a drawback, it's the battery life. And it's, you know, the fact that it's not natively PC VR. But I think if you get more headsets that are at that kind of like budget price point, because I think a Quest is like, what, $200 or something like that?
Yeah,
that's a reasonable price for an entry-level wireless VR headset, especially for someone who doesn't have a gaming PC and just like wants to play Onward. One of the problems I see, though, is that it's marketed to an extremely young audience, and like they're missing a whole segment of young adults who would be interested in, you know, these experiences that we love so much. But that's kind of, you know, what came to mind as you were explaining that position on VR.
Yeah, there are improvements being made, like, and things are getting easier to use, right? Even the Rift S, you don't need to set up any stands or anything. You just plug the thing in. It's definitely, it's getting there, and I'm excited because it is the most immersive way to experience gaming. Like, I'm never, ever going to play a horror game in VR. I'm never going to do it because it is that scary.
Yeah,
even
dude.
Playing Onward, like, solo against bots.
Oh, it's
like,
so good.
I still remember the first time. Like a bot ran at me in Onward, and I was like, I feel like I'm about to get tackled.
I'm
like,
going to actually die right now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's amazing. It's crazy that we can have these experiences.
Sure.
But it's just, yeah, there's just, it's like a, it's death by like a thousand tiny cuts, I think, for VR. Which is like the same for like a lot of the games that we play. Now that I think about it in, you know, in the tactical shooter space, it's like, it's so good at this. It's so good at doing immersion, but there's just a whole bunch of tiny problems attached to it that just turn it into like a headache. So good in small doses. And I think that's what kind of turns a lot of people off, is that like, you can only do VR. At least I know most of the people who have VR headsets, it's like, it's a couple hours every now and then. It's not really something that they're grinding endlessly.
Nah, with very few exceptions. I'll tell you though, man, from a like, from a real world training perspective, I know there's a couple other VR platforms out there, but the one that I got to touch was the Chimera XR. Basically like I bumped in to the CEO of this company. Dude's name is Taylor. He's a veteran from the Canadian military. We kind of started talking on Instagram, you know, shared a little bit about my background. He felt comfortable sharing a kind of like their developer build of this system. So basically like they shipped me this Pelican case. It's like a bright orange Pelican case. I open it and inside this like bright orange Pelican case is an Oculus headset and then a lower receiver, or what looked like a lower receiver for an AR-15 or an M4. So basically like they took the Oculus Touch controllers and they turned it into an actual lower receiver, and I shouldn't say an actual low receiver. It looks like a low receiver for an M4. So then I could take the one, you know, like my personal rifle at the house, break it down and drop my barrel into this like 3D printed, I assume it's 3D printed. I'm not sure how they manufacture it, but drop it into this thing. And then they offer this like training simulation where you get to customize the environment. You get to like draw out buildings, choose where the walls are, choose where the breach points are, choose where the windows are, you know, drop, you know, shooters, no shooters, kids, women, give them like randomized ish behavior, tell them to be like aggressive, conceal a weapon, not conceal a weapon, move towards you, away from you. Like you can just create a really, really authentic experience. And then you can run the drills. So you actually have like shooters in this environment holding this thing that feels a lot like a real world, you know, rifle that they would be training with and moving through this super complex scenario. And the value proposition there was just enormous from like a training perspective. And I don't think that that experience can be copied and pasted into the, you know, civilian or consumer market by any means. But I think it does speak to like how practical VR is likely to become for training purposes. And then if it kind of becomes more robust in the training world, then I've just got to hope that some of that bleeds over into like the civilian market. And if it's good enough for, you know, the police and the military, and you've got these kind of like high tier experiences on that end, inevitably, or at least I hope inevitably, it would come to the gaming market as well. But it was phenomenal, man. I think like, I wish that I could take that hardware and let you and my buddies, you know, get hands on. Cause it was, it's special. It's just, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I remember going to a couple of, conventions. I don't know if you ever heard of IDSEC, but it's like they're on the new edge of like all the technology and stuff.
Yeah.
Or the military stuff.
I'm actually, going a week after next. I don't know if you're going, we'll have to link up.
Oh, no, I'm not going, but it's crazy to see how much of it all is virtualized. Right. I mean, it started with like VBS and, you know, starting through the simulation type stuff, but like they're using it to teach people how to repair aircraft. They like JTAC simulators. Mm-hmm. There's so much that is being virtualized as far as training is concerned, just because it's cheaper, it's safer, and it's just more efficient. But it's going to like the how much or how important it is that gets picked up on the military side of things or the defense side of things. Because how many like innovations or you know, tech or actual products do we get on the civilian side has bled over from the research or development from the military investment in these products, right?
Oh my gosh,
like there's so many things in the civilian world that only exists because the military or the defense side of things decided to, you know, put time and money into getting, you know, a certain idea to a stage. And so it's really, I guess you could say, encouraging to see that it's being pushed to its limits, and there's a lot of money in it on the defense side of things, because you have to expect that there will be bleed over on the consumer side of things eventually. Maybe not anytime soon, right? We're still extremely early into the I guess VR life cycle as far as things are concerned.
Yeah.
But with the money and time that's being spent, and you can see it when you go to these conventions that into the VR space, it's only, I think, a matter of time until some big innovation that solves a lot of these problems comes to the consumer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You spoke about VBS. It's obviously made by Bohemia Interactive Simulations. Bohemia Studios, of course, makes Arma. Do you by chance know what came first? I really don't know. Like, I don't know if it was a sim company that got into gaming or a gaming company that got into military. When I say mil sims, I mean like literal military simulations.
From how it plays, I have to assume that it was the sim side. So I have to look, because that is going into some history there. But just
I just didn't know if that was like if you had that trivia and you're yes, right, like
it had to have been a I could be completely wrong here, but with how funky the game plays,
assessment, like that's spot on. Like if it plays like ass and it's just like incredibly clunky to navigate, then it must have come from the defense side. True. Oh god, that's too funny. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the milsim thing, what's and god, this is such like a common question, but it's one that I love asking because it's fun to hear people's take on it. Fun versus milsim, what's the balance and how do you achieve it? And talk to me about your Arma server. That was a freaking wild ride, my dude. It got crazy over there.
This is the one question that doesn't have an answer, right? It's like, because everyone's got their different slice and flavor of it. I think like my content and the mods that we put out or the experiences we put out hit a pretty broad range of you know, milsim versus fun, and being able to choose your own space within that experience is really important, right? So like certain squad servers even are more serious than others. And so within the product, you're able to actually move the sliders even more. But I think for me specifically, the main things that I care about are being immersed and not having any meta information, or, you know, I'm a big sucker for zero HUD. But the main thing is making sure that the teamwork and communication aspect of it are there. Like, I think that's one of the most important things. It's like, you could have the most amazing, beautiful game that runs smooth, has great controls, is extremely realistic in the damage models and everything. But if you can't talk to one another, I think that's a huge nail in the coffin. It's hard to describe, because there's certain, the way my mind is geared to it right now is I can find out how to make certain games more to my liking, but it's hard to come at that from nothing. And give you an example of, like, from scratch, what is the best split between milsim and fun. But like, I could tell you, like, well, for squad, I would do this to make it more milsim-y. It's just, it's a really tough question for sure. Maybe you have a better idea of your specific slice and how you would kind of balance those.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you said. And I also just find it funny that you mentioned the importance of the ability to communicate organically and how that should be built into every game. And then I consider that 2042 launched without in-game VoIP, which is mind-blowing to me.
But in 2021,
yeah. Yeah, like what is happening to this planet? But yeah, so on the fun versus milsim question, like it completely depends on the person in my estimate. For me, I need the game to be accessible so that I can begin playing it without having to fight through just like a ton of hurdles. I adore Arma. It's like one of my favorite games of all time, but it is a very, very difficult game to play. Not because anything about the gameplay is particularly challenging, you know, from minute to minute, but because of the amount of mods that you have to get installed to enjoy certain experiences, because it relies on external applications, you know, to use in-game voice in an effective way, because there's just some issues with the way that servers are managed and the amount of, you know, tech know-how that goes into running an Arma server and making sure that it's loaded with all of the mods and stuff that you need. So like, in that regard, Arma is a really phenomenal experience, but it's one that you pay dearly for in the way of just like time and effort invested to even begin playing. So like, one of my requirements is that a game has to be accessible. I should be able to jump in and play right away and begin enjoying it, like, essentially immediately, especially because I'm so strapped on time between, you know, work and content creation and dad mode and husband mode. And like, my time is just so stretched that every single moment I'm at the keyboard needs to be like well invested. And I get super grumpy if I spend 2 hours trying to begin playing a game, you know? And then the other one is like, the gameplay itself should be authentic insofar as it delivers like a very immersive, very cinematic, and very fun experience. It should be, you should be able to do things that I like want to do in real life. That's why I really like it. You know, in Ground Branch, I can go to the low ready, I can go to the high ready, I can go to the compress ready. The way that I change my magazines is, you know, similar to the kind of decisions that I'd want to make in real life. Like, it pays real close attention to those small details that, to me, you know, as a practitioner of some of this stuff, lends itself to like an authenticity that I like immediately recognize, respect, and enjoy. And it allows me to like move my character in ways that I would want to move myself in that same exact like situation. So that's kind of like some of the stuff that I look for. And I guess what I don't look for is the things about the military and law enforcement that aren't fun. Like, I don't need to, you know, / salute other people like in my group of friends. Like I don't need to pretend like I outrank you or you outrank me, and we don't have to, you know, use unnecessary brevity codes and like high speed language on the radio for me to feel special. Like, all of those things might have an organic role in a game. I mean, using certain brevity codes and communicating a certain way adds authenticity to a point, but like, it's abundantly clear when I'm talking to someone in a game who's trying to like communicate clearly with me versus like, you know, someone who's taken it to the next level because they think, you know, speaking in a certain way adds cool points. And typically, unfortunately, it does the opposite, right?
Yeah, I think for me, like, I like taking all that realism it's hard for me because I've never served or had that real world firsthand experience. But for me, it's taking that experience and the milsim of it and stripping everything that isn't functional out. So I don't need to have ranks. We don't need to be LARPing around.
Yeah,
but
dude,
there's a reason. Like when people ask me why I you know, ask for how copier, I say copier, or I ask for any of that stuff, is because half the time in these games, the other dude doesn't hear you. They just don't. So it's hard for me to know. Did you hear what I said? Like, are you tracking? Like, or do you know what the plan is here? Because so many of these games rely on communication and teamwork. Like everything that, at least on my channel that I do, whether it's like the planning of it, right, or the communication of it and the actual words that we use, like all of that serves a purpose. Like it's not because like I'm trying to LARP and like put on a show and stuff like that. It's because if we don't do things this way, because we are not a trained force and we don't work with each other 24/7 and, you know, all this stuff, like the most important thing is transferring the communication and the idea from one person that you've never played with before to the next person. And so there's a reason why certain things and why the military does like certain, you know, planning and stuff. So like even when it comes to, you know, the briefs and stuff like that, like we're not gonna follow a whole op ord like from head to toe, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm not gonna print out like a whole target package if we run something.
Yeah.
But we need to have like, this is the situation, this is why we're doing it, this is like I strip all of the stuff that's unnecessary out and you stick with what is completely functional. And then from there, you can get that experience without having to spend hours upon hours of learning things. And like, it's just, it's really difficult to find that balance because when you're rolling with a unit, you know, one thing might work better than the other. But with the experiences that I at least play these days are completely open and public, you need to have some kind of form of standardization so that everyone can just hop on and work organically with each other and hop off and just not have to, you know, go to training. Because I think training is great. If you want to be that dedicated and you have a unit to roll with, that's great. It's just not my flavor of things. I just want to be able to hop on and hop off and have that accessibility that you talk about. Because while you can get really awesome experiences out of like a tight-knit group of guys that's running drills and all this quote-unquote LARPy stuff, I just don't have the time for it. That's not my flavor of milsim. So it's really interesting to see that there's so many different levels of it, and it all comes down to personal experience. Because you get like reenactors and stuff, or like really hardcore LARPers and stuff that'll hop on servers, and I, you know, I've rolled with a whole bunch of different groups that are you know, they salute each other, they have ranks, and they address each other. It's like, it's a little cringe for me, but like, hey, it's their flavor of stuff, and it's America, you know. Do whatever you want. I mean, I guess it's the internet. Do whatever you want. Have whatever fun you want to have.
Yeah, like, man.
It's just find the group of guys that you want to vibe with and stick with them. Just that's, I think, the main thing is like, and why it's so important to have your own servers and stuff as a content creator.
Yeah,
is because
dude,
I know my guys on my server, we all are generally of the same mindset. I'm not about to hop onto a comp server and start dictating like how things should be done.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
It's important to have your own space. So that's, yeah, it's a pretty heated topic. And I think one of the biggest things about milsim that kills me a lot in the more practical sense of things is like when it comes to balancing, and when we think about real world balancing of weapons and bullet penetration or weapon systems or vehicles, right? It's like, oh, you know, the Apache should be able to sit at like 5K and hit you with a laser guided meteor or radar guided munition.
it's game breaking.
Correct. Yeah, people don't realize that these weapon systems are so overpowered in real life.
Yeah, and it's terrifying. Yeah, it's like the 5K, like the AGM-114 on the Apache you just described has a max engagement range of like 13.5K. You would not be able to hear it, see it. It would be completely off map and it would kill you. Like no one wants that experience. I agree. It's really difficult to achieve that. And I'm often asked like why I don't play PvP more. And it's interesting because that's how my channel started. That's what I did for a really long time. But it's so hard to get like authentic, you know, quasi realistic experiences in PvP. I think like Squad and Arma, you know, do a pretty good job of it oftentimes. But the reality is like people on the internet shooting pixels at each other do not behave like humans on the battlefield shooting bullets at each other. And until suppression is actually, you know, effective at causing you to fear for your life in a game, like you're not going to be able to achieve the same level of realism in PvP as you might want to. And I know you and I have kind of like talked about that before, but from a milsim perspective, it just makes it extremely difficult to get that same experience. And inherently, there's going to be like some hokiness, and that's why like your conventional, like, you know, CQB style tactics aren't going to be super effective in your 0 hours or your Rainbow Six Siege or your Ground Branch and in like all these games. Like, you're going to get wiped if you stack an Onador and you go flying through it. And it's just it's the way of PvP with pixels.
Yeah, it's really. It's so hard because when you're playing a game, you have to remember that like it is a game, and as much as you wish or would like it to be as immersive or quote unquote realistic as possible, human beings, especially when you're playing in player versus player, will do things that are gamey because you are allowed to, because they can. And so like even PvP stuff, like I've slowly, as I've grown as a gamer, I guess, have moved away from PvP just because you can see how not only toxic, but how metagamey it can get within this space.
Yep.
Like, I mean, the difference is very clear. You go to a private Ground Branch event where there's like a lot of heavily enforced rules in place, and it plays drastically different than an open Ground Branch server where people are sprinting all over the place and jumping on roofs, and like it's just like chaos. And it's so hard to get people to play similarly, which is going back to like why it's important to find a group. If you don't have one, find a community. If you are a community leader or content creator, to foster that and grow that, is because if you want to have that experience, it unfortunately, as much as we hate it, does take time and effort to build that space for yourself. And so that's why like a lot of the stuff that I do these days, whether it's, you know, modding my own servers or trying to fix things myself and create that space, like that's what's going to sustain me at least until, you know, the next project.
For sure, dude. And you just alluded to something I think that's telling, and that's like the importance of having your own space. And you know, you've been super gracious for me, so I'm able to like run a Ground Branch server, run an Insurgency Sandstorm server, and host my community in those places with very, you know, tailored experiences. You've obviously done that on a massive scale with Squad Ops, and you have grown this enormous community of like-minded gamers who play in these like enormous One Life events that are iconic, frankly, like across the genre. I don't know of any other communities. I think Shack Tack is probably the only other one that really comes to mind immediately that does anything of the same level as what Squad Ops done. Of course, your Arma server is delivering a similar experience. Your Battlefield 2042 server is now doing the same thing. And you're doing all of this through, is it all through on AWN? Your kind of, I say side hustle, your other hustle? Like,
yeah, I think that was just born out of necessity, right? Because I was tired of like having other server hosts either not provide quality servers, or their UI is garbage, or just X, Y, and Z. And so like me and my business partner, Barton, it was very much by gamers for gamers, rather than just having to deal with these server companies that are just hosting servers for these games that it's just completely outdated or whatever. So it was very important for me to build these things and make my space. I think that's been a very prominent theme within my, like, I guess, progression as a human being, like growing up, is like, I'm going to build my own space, and I'm going to do what I have to do to build my own space and play by my own rules. Because I think that's very important to me, is to have that freedom to change things. If I don't like something or I need a feature added on my server host, like I just add it. I just do it. I don't have to wait for them to do it. I think that is where I'd like to go. And it's so funny. It's so funny because I look at Blue Drake's kind of progression as a content creator, like as an individual.
Yes, dude, I know where this is going. Go.
Yeah,
say it.
And I follow that progression, and then I saw Moy, like he goes through these phases as a content creator. It's like you start out, you're having a lot of fun, you're doing what you're doing, you're making stuff, and then you eventually like you get tired of dealing with other people's stuff, and you start building your own stuff. Yeah. And I never thought I'd get to this stage where it's like, Blue asked me years ago, I was like, hey, you want to get into game development? It's like, nah, I'm just having fun. I'm playing my game. But then you start realizing, like, we have problems all over the place. I'm going to start doing stuff myself. And it's just a slow progression. So it's cool to see Moy, like, he dipped his toes into squad modding, and now he's building his own space in Foxhole. And he built his own space in Squad 2. It's just really cool to see the progression. And it's odd how that all works out. It's just funny. It's just funny looking at it all.
What a badass group of dudes, man. Like, how lucky are we that there's like this tiny population of just super passionate people in the niche? It was like just a couple weeks ago, Moydog who I know you used to host a podcast with. Solid dude. If you guys don't know who Moidog is, please check him out. He's on Twitch and YouTube, and now he's playing Foxhole recently. But I saw him tweeting, what was that, like a month ago? Like, it's probably only been 45 or 60 days, and he was like, Foxhole, you guys ever heard of it? Should I check it out? I responded, I was like, yeah, dude, check it out. You know, it's a top-down RTS-style game. It's a PvP persistent conflict thing where you control one dude. And since that, like, that had to have just been like 60 days ago. But since then, this dude is like literally turning the tide of this campaign, like this war. Like, he's played 3 or 4 wars now. He's leading his own army, like, in this game. Like, he's a prominent community figure. Dare I say, probably the most influential in the content creation world for Foxhole right now. Pretty cool. And then Blue Drake, like, imagine getting so fed up with the gaming industry that you just roast all of it and make your own video game because it's better than what they're making for you. Like, the ultimate just, like, F you. And I admire Blue a lot for it. I know it takes a lot of guts, and God knows he has to just pour himself entirely into the endeavor that is Operation Harsh Doorstop to make that happen. And I know it's not his first effort either, but it's just super impressive what these guys do. And it's all in line with what you just said, which is, like, you know, if you don't like the door, breach the wall, right? Like, it's that mindset. Like, it's just being driven and kind of falling in love with what you do and then going all in, like, you know, burning the ships. That's where it all started.
It's so much so a double-edged sword. It's what's, you know, so exciting and terrifying about what we do. It's just like, we are constantly in the pursuit of what excites us, and we have the freedom to find it or create it. But it's that unknowing of or the hard work and just the fear of, like, well, what the heck is gonna happen? I think Blue told me once very long ago when I was growing up to be a creator, and it's always stuck with me. It was like, we don't know if we're gonna be broke or millionaires within 5 years, but we wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah, right? Like, that's kind of the mindset that I think a lot of us are at. It's like, we're just chasing this dragon that is taking us on a roller coaster, and it's fun, it's terrifying. It just, being able to withstand that kind of fluctuation is just, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort. And I respect, I don't know how you and Moy do it with families and stuff. Like, I can't even imagine. I did it when I had nothing to lose. Like, it takes some kind of person to be able to, like, jump into content creation and just stick with it. It definitely just takes a ton of dedication. God. So, like, massive respect to you too.
Dude, all credit to my family. Like, my wife is as patient as a saint to let me live this crazy life that, like, I've signed myself up for, in content creation and otherwise. And I don't know how she's been hanging on for dear life and support me the whole time, but it's been freaking, yeah. It's not boring, you know?
It's not boring. It's definitely not
boring.
It's
not boring. Dude, it's nuts, man. You've asked me a couple times, I don't know, over the last, like, couple months, you know, some pretty detailed questions about the military and, like, my opinion on different things or potential career paths or details of service or otherwise. Is that something that you've considered in the past or something that you're considering for the future? Or are you just asking kind of out of curiosity? What's going on in your brain there?
There's definitely a lot of questions that I ask you, and none of them are really ever focused, or not all of them are focused on one particular thing. But, like, you're the guy I go to because I know you have a lot of experience. I know you have done a good amount of gaming, and you have experience in gaming, because I can definitely point out, like, a whole bunch of guys who play video games and are in the military, but don't really have the familiarity with games themselves, or I want to say good, but, like, our understanding of the fact that it is a game, right? Because I can go find a whole bunch of military dudes who are like, this isn't true to real life, but it's a game. We have to make certain concessions.
It's supposed to be fun.
This is why certain things, it's supposed to be fun. So, like, I go to you to ask your opinion on it, because just like your channel, you do have that extremely unique ability to, you're very articulate. You can really explain what's going on in your head and why you have it. You have the experience and the actual knowledge, you know, textbook knowledge of what you're talking about. And then you have that chill vibe of being a gamer and like just being able to understand that things are a game, and just truly being a gamer at heart that can interact with others in a great way, like as a personality. And I think for me as an individual, especially, like, I'm very particular with, like, I'm an introvert. I'm very picky with who I really, really talk to. And so you're just someone that, as a person, I can vibe with very well. So that's why I go to you with a whole bunch of questions about, you know, whether it be fitness or whether it be military questions. Like, sometimes I'll have questions about, you know, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, what would I do? And the answer to that is probably join the military, because I don't have anything else that I'm interested in. I'm not really interested in money. I'm not really interested in, you know, I don't have any other passion besides doing things related to this military style organization and tactics of it all. And that interests me, right? That is something that I'm passionate about besides gaming and learning more about and, you know, even LARPing around and practicing on the airsoft.
Yeah.
So that's definitely probably the only thing that I could think I would be passionate about outside of, you know, content creation. So I ask you those questions. I ask you the I guess military advisor, quote unquote, questions, because, you know, as I work on these other projects, whether it's the Arma Liberation server or the squad mods or even the Battlefield server and stuff like that, you have a good background and understanding that, like, when I'm asking you this question, there's a lot of play. It's like, you understand that, like, or I get the feeling that, you know, that I'm probably asking for a video game, and yep, like, there's already that context implied. And so that the response is pretty straightforward. I'm not getting like paragraphs and upon paragraphs of like why this is done. It's like it's just, you're very easy to talk to.
Dude, I would hit you up with so many paragraphs if I had time, but it's usually like, you know, like I'm hitting a lunch break and I've got like half an hour before I got to be grinding again, and I'm just like boom 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 boom. You get a tweet,
ask you a very specific question, and it's like boom, like two sentences back, and it's like it's already along the lines of like what I'm kind of like going to use the information for. It's like bingo, got it done. It's like,
that's
great.
Too funny. Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that. I pride myself in the ability to communicate. I think it's like an important thing that people should try to develop over their lifetime. And you absolutely have the gift of gab too. You're extremely well-spoken. And what I find interesting is you also said you're an introvert. How can you be an introvert with 500,000 people following you on the internet?
See, that's the weird thing. I think you probably experience right now without knowing, probably, is because, like, when we look at our subscribers, right, they are human beings, but like a lot of the times it's a number on the screen, like, as opposed to being an actor or, you know, a famous figure in the real world, where you have, you know, you put on a concert, you have like 30,000 people in real world, like, or you get like people taking pictures of you or stuff like that. Like, at least in my brain, the worlds are pretty separate. I feel like I'm the same guy who started playing video games like 10 years ago. Like, I'm just a nerd who sits in my room and I play video games, and I record it and I upload you know, videos. And sometimes I forget there's that many people that are listening to me, that I have that much influence, that, you know, it's just, it's so strange. It's such a weird thing, right? Because it's, internet fame is fame. It's still like recognition. But it's just the way your brain comprehends it, at least for me, it's two separate worlds. So
yeah,
I don't interact with, like, I interact with people as I game, but I was doing that since I was a kid. Like, it's not like as I grow as a music artist, I'm meeting all these awesome people in real life, and we're having like all these awesome parties, and I'm being wined and dined and like all this cool stuff. You know, I'm still sitting in my room. I'm still playing. Like, so I get some cool stuff, and, you know, sometimes I get like a free press kit and stuff like that.
Sure,
but it's nothing crazy. It's just like it's interesting. It's weird how it all scales as a virtual content creator.
Yeah, concur on all accounts. I'm nowhere near your level of success, but whatever success I have achieved happened nearly on accident. And I very much relate to how you talk about living essentially in two different worlds. And, you know, who I hang out with in real life, I think I'm probably the only gamer among us, you know, and then the people I, you know, hang out with on the internet are a completely different crowd. And they're very much two different worlds. And to be honest, like, most of the people I interact with day to day in my job and otherwise in real life, like 90% of them have no idea that I'm a content creator who's playing games and, you know, talking to companies or developing combat simulations and advising on the development of games. Like, they have no idea that this is something that is a part of my life. So absolutely relate to that. And tell me, you've talked about Airsoft here a couple times. What's going on with that? I've played Airsoft before, but I haven't really like poured myself into it. Is there like a field near your house? Like, what's your experience been? I know you got injured a little while ago. Are you back at it now?
Yeah, I've been playing Airsoft now for maybe like consistently like 6 months ish without I had that little that broken foot for like a month or two there, but like I've been going pretty consistently for maybe half a year now, and it's just I go to this place. There's a ton of fields. That's one of the like great things about living in SoCal is like there's a lot of options here. I know people who live in other places aren't as fortunate. You got to drive like pretty far, but there's a whole bunch of fields near me, and it's just been something that I think for me is like it's awesome to get out. And like me being an introvert, I honestly only. Like I talk to I live with my girlfriend, so we interact with each other daily. But sure. As far as other human beings, I only interact with other human beings if I'm going out and I'm like doing chores or something, which is occasional. Like I just Uber Eats and I get a whole bunch of stuff to send to the house, yeah. Amazon stuff. But the only time I really interact with people in the real world is when I go to play Airsoft. And so like that's enough social interaction for me in the real world to last me the whole week. That's but it's too been funny. Great. Yeah, it's been good for me to meet people. I've made a lot of friends. It's good for me to get exercise. I get to mess around with, Kit and, Greg from Haley Strategic has been awesome with hooking me up with some stuff. And it's just got that. It helps feed that interest of mine with the military and like Kit and stuff like that. And just seeing what everyone's wearing out there. And it's a fun, casual time. Like, there's no heavy LARPers and stuff. People will wear impression kits and stuff like that, but it's nothing over the top. No one actually, as they play Airsoft, at least in my experience, has ever like thought they're in the military and is like cringe yelling at people and like, yeah. Saluting people out there. Like it's always been like, it's just an impression. It's just like people are kidding up to have fun. And it's you do what you want to do. Like we go back to before, like finding your slice of milsim, hang with the people you want to hang with, have your fun. There's a ton of people that will tell you no matter what you do, there's always going to be someone that hates what you do.
yeah,
but
that's true.
Yeah, Airsoft has been great, and that is one of the actual first places where I started going back to like the whole growth thing and being quote unquote like internet famous or whatever. That's where I started to get recognized and where it's starting to feel like. Oh, people know me because before, like if I just sit in my house and I do whatever, like I'm not going to get recognized. And just like you said, like at work, I feel like maybe have you gotten recognized with anyone around your job or what you do?
Like
is anyone
yeah.
in the real world yet?
Only a couple,
you?
Oh, like one or two. Cause my target audience is also like, a high density of my target audience is also in my workplace, right? Naturally.
Yeah.
And so I think by virtue of that, I have been recognized a couple times, obviously not, by physically recognized because I still am being a shy boy in that regard. But I've had a couple dudes like, hey, I 100% recognize your voice. And I'm like, yeah, it's a little awkward. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoy my stuff. Let's not talk about this anymore.
Yeah, it's, I think that's hilarious because I had the same kind of reaction. It's like when I'm talking to people and I hear that they know my stuff, it's kind of like it's a weird dynamic, right? Because it's like this person kind of knows a lot more about me and like what I do
dude.
And is and I know nothing about this person, and
it is a lopsided encounter.
Yeah, but it's going and playing Airsoft has been great, and people have started to recognize my voice. Or I post pictures on Instagram now and stuff like that, so I start getting recognized, and it's cool because like I start feeling like it is a markable actual real world experience that shows like how much I've grown, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I had a lot of fun. You should definitely jump into Airsoft. I don't know if you have fields near you, but it's just a fun time. It's just it's good. It's good times every week.
I totally want to, man. It's especially as like my career has changed over time. I don't get a lot of like the fire maneuver stuff. Those opportunities. Like I have in the past. And so like Airsoft is fun. It is a game, but it's absolutely still exercising like those fundamentals of fire and maneuver and teamwork and communication, and even like those micro things like body positioning, weapon manipulation, like those individual skills that'll make you successful in combat or at the range. You can still exercise that stuff at Airsoft, and you can do that while also having fun. Like, it's okay to make training fun, or it's okay to just have fun altogether and not take it seriously at all. Like, there's such a broad spectrum, and I do think Airsoft is a venue to exercise some of that stuff. And I know you were planning on going to Copperhead. I definitely wanted to. I think if I do jump into Airsoft, it'll probably be at an event like that, and I'd want to do it like with good dudes. Certainly, you talked about Greg from Haley Strategic. He's always been good to me as well. And I'd absolutely want to link up with, you know, guys like him and you and others of that mind, so that like we have the right kind of people in the right kind of place. And it'd be a cool opportunity to, like, you know, not only to have a blast, but to make some content in the real world. And I'd love to like strap GoPros to stuff and throw some drones up and really, like, you know, just have a blast and make some kick-ass stuff in an environment like that. I think there's a huge opportunity for it.
Yeah, it's definitely an experience. I think the coolest thing is, as far as guys who aren't in the military or do, you know, the cool door kicking stuff or anything like that, is it really shows you, it gives you a whole new level of appreciation for the guys who are out there doing, you know, what they're doing. Like, all of this stuff that we're doing in Airsoft, it's a lot of it is for appreciation and just, you know, being fanboys of like the guys who are actually doing it. It's more of a positive thing. I very rarely run into someone who plays Airsoft and thinks they're hot shit. Most of the time it's because, like, I'm playing Airsoft and damn, like, it's awesome to see, like, or you have respect for people who are doing it in real life, like walking outside and like 95, it's not even that hot. It's like 95. Mm-hmm. I know it gets so much hotter like overseas and stuff like that, but like in full kit, and some guys are out there.
Yeah,
you feel it. Some guys are actually out there in like real plates just to like get a feel for it. It's borderline cringe, but they do it because they want to understand what that's like. And it's a whole world that they don't touch because they either never joined the military, never had the opportunity, or pulled the trigger on doing it. But it's like, you learn so much, even from like flat range stuff, because we see a lot of real world, firearm guys now jumping into Airsoft, because it's cheap, it's affordable, it teaches you force on force and like how you actually respond, because you can go shoot on a flat range and hit targets and stuff, but when something starts shooting back at you, right, or your kit, you know, working your kit in stress, or, you know, being in all the awkward weird positions that you're in, like maneuvering around, like there's so many times where I'll be squatting on the field or like leaning over, it's like I've never ever put my body in this freaking position ever before.
Much less try to like accurately manipulate a weapon and engage targets while you're in that position.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it teaches you a ton. And I think gamers, especially when they jump into Airsoft, that's the main thing they take away, is they jump in there like, damn, you know, well, I complain about ADS speed in my freaking video game, but I don't realize that like every time I shoulder the weapon, I have to get a proper, you know, side alignment and stuff like that. You take that for granted in video games. Or like people talk about, well, Karma, what do you think about like weapon jamming them? And I'm like, if you're going to add weapon jamming in, you might as well add in the random chance for your character to fall over and trip, because that happens so much more than your weapon actually jamming, especially like just seeing the amount of people that just fall on their face when we're out there on the field. It's crazy, because it happens. That's like one of the most common things, I feel like, is just uneven footing, or you step on something, or something catches your kit, snags or whatever, you bump your head, like that stuff happens way more. And I think affects you way more than like random chance for bullet jamming.
Yeah, dude, I love what you're describing right now. Every service member, especially the infantrymen that are listening to this podcast right now, relate to what you're saying. And they're actually right now, wherever they are in the world, they're laughing to themselves, because you got to experience like one fraction of what their life is like every single time they go to the field. Mm-hmm. And I think it's true that much of the world, especially, you know, in the West and in first world countries, they never experience the misery that is just being in the elements. It's becoming far less common to be raised in rural settings. It's being, you know, becoming far less common to serve on the whole. It's becoming far less common to, you know, enjoy doing things like backpacking in the backcountry, like doing backcountry hunting, like, you know, sitting in a deer stand when it's freezing cold, like camping, like just those sort of activities. They seem to be not completely falling by the wayside, but becoming much less common. And the thing about a lot of those activities too, is a lot of them are recreational, and you get to choose when you go fishing or when you go sit in a deer stand. You know, but there's a certain level of misery that comes with a not quite freezing day where it's pouring rain and, you know, the rain is miserably cold and you got a 20 mile an hour wind and the sun is going down, but you still have to move 15 miles to your patrol base. Like there's some uniquely miserable experiences associated with stuff like that, that most people just never get to touch. And it's interesting to think as something like as simple as airsoft as being an outlet that kind of introduces people to kind of that level of misery, for lack of a better term, and to the point where like when you're maneuvering, and tell me if you've experienced this playing airsoft, where you just kind of get so tired, like there's something that you know you should do, like maybe it's a mag change, maybe it's reorganizing your magazines in your kit, maybe it's taking a swig of water from your Camelback, maybe it's double checking the battery on your red dot, maybe it's changing the battery in your nods, maybe it's stowing some excess webbing so you don't trip on it. Like there's just some small act that you know you should do, but you're just so tired and so unable to maneuver that you just consider not doing it. And like in that moment, you run the risk of like that lapse in discipline in this one small act that's just a way of like illustrating what fatigue does in combat, even on, the airsoft or the paintball field.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. And that's also literally why, like, it's one of the only reasons that I exercise. And it's like the reason why I am working out is because you start to notice, like, as you get tired, you get lazy, you just don't have the energy, and there are certain things that you just should be doing. There's like, oh God, you just learn so much. And of course, yeah, it depends on what you're going into and what you're trying to take away from airsoft. So some guys just go out there and they LARP around, they're walking around, they're not pushing themselves on the field, and they're just there to have fun and chill and shoot people with their long range snipers and stuff like that. But you got like a lot of the guys who are there, who are trying to learn as much as they can about just how things function. And like, it's like, a lot of the times, like uneven terrain or going up a hill or over their berm, there are so many things I learned the hard way of, like jumping into a trench or like how to properly slide. Like these small things that you take for granted when you have zero experience with the subject matter or you've never done it in the real world, and you're going in and it's like all these tiny things, like are your magazines properly retained, is your dump pouch too open, like I've lost mags, like I've seen people lose mags because their kid isn't tight, like they don't have their stuff tied down, like even tie downs for like attachments and your optics and stuff. You start to see like why there's a reason why all this stuff is done, because shit comes apart, your stuff goes flying everywhere, something's not properly set up. It's a whole world. And I think the biggest thing for me is like being able to go out there every week and take something out of it as far as like learning something, or places where I can improve as a person, it's a lot. It's so much fun. It's seeing the progression of like, oh, maybe I can run a little bit further. Maybe I can lean a bit, more efficiently here. Even like, I know it's like, it's probably, if you were to watch us do like the clear buildings and stuff, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute, shit show. But like just being able to practice the very basics of like slicing it properly or just working with random guys is a nightmare in and of itself, but it's just being able to go in and every week take something out that you learn, whether it's about your kit, whether it's about yourself and your own fitness. Even this last weekend, I took out that 40 mic that I was showing you in my DMs.
And you regretted like, that weight.
Yeah, no, you're thinking about it's like, this thing is heavy. This thing is really heavy. And it's like, it's so funny because you learn something about yourself or about what you're doing every single week. So it's a great learning tool. It's a lot of fun. It's nowhere near the level of what the real guys are doing. And there's like massive amounts of spec. I'm pretty sure like almost every airsofter has massive, I'm sure almost every airsofter has massive amount of respect for the guys doing it in the real world. And it's not, we're not, trying to steal your glory or make fools of us or anything like that. It's just, we're just trying to learn. We're just trying to take a glimpse of a sliver of what, the guys out there are really doing and what they really experience. Because I think there's a lot that we learn about ourselves and a lot that we learn to respect from doing it. And it's just a cool thing to see.
Yeah, I definitely don't take any negative connotation from people who enjoy playing airsoft. I would encourage it as just like a general activity to get outside in, because it's good to know how to handle yourself just more broadly. And I want to do it, dude. Like it sounds awesome. Everything you're describing sounds extremely intriguing to me. I saw the Savage Actual dudes kind of jump into it a little bit. Had you talked to them about Airsoft? I know that they've reviewed a couple of your videos like over the last couple of weeks and months. But have you talked to them at all about their experience with Airsoft?
I have not. I spoke with them a long time ago about they wanted to get into it, but okay. It was still in the middle of COVID. I haven't caught up to them since, you know, I started heading out again, but I definitely do want to get a group of guys, and they are they're closer to me than other content creators. Yeah. So I definitely will probably try and reach out to them here soon. And just get some content in and just have some fun with them, because I love that. Like just being able to sit there and ask anyone that's actually, you know, done the door kicking or like who has done anything remotely like it in the real world, ask them questions about it. Like even you over the internet and our little like text messages, like I'll ask you really, really, really weird questions.
Sure.
But it's awesome to learn. I enjoy the learning part of it. That's what I get out of Airsoft is learning something every time. And there you'll get guys who go in there and just want to look cool. You get guys who are in there who want to drop bodies. But I think it's just like anything in this world. You get what you take out of it. But I definitely think if there was ever a time to do it, I think there's a very specific type of content that I really want to do with like you and a whole bunch of people with it, which is team-based airsoft content. Yep. There's not that much of it. A lot of it's like solo guys going out and getting kills. I'd love to get a solid squad together. And that just goes with like my whole channel and stuff, like the teamwork and the communication side of it. I want to get like a team thing going, but it's kind of rough with where everyone is.
For sure. Well, first, looking cool and dropping bodies are critical tasks. However, I concur on the like team-based airsoft stuff. I think like events like Copperhead would lend itself nicely to that. And if you do end up throwing stuff together with Savage Actual, anytime you give me like 60 days notice, dude, like I can, in 60 days, I can convince my wife it's okay for me to fly that way. I just need time and space to do it, right? And as far as like, you know, vets or others getting, you know, been out of shape about dudes playing airsoft, I have not seen that personally. I think that if dudes are getting fired up over it, they're probably pretty young, you know, soldiers, sailors, airmen, marine, or others. Like, you know, people early in their service career may on occasion be more inclined to get fired up over stuff like that because, you know, they're young and they've still got a lot of that motivation and a lot to prove, you know, and I get that. But I think, you know, we'd all be better off taking a deep breath and just appreciating that other people are enjoying hobbies and getting fit and going outside. And they're people who, like, you know, respect what we do. So I think that's pretty, pretty awesome. Do you, you kind of joke about shooting live firearms every once in a while. Have you ever shot real steel? Is that something you aspire to do? I know in LA, it's not exactly a hobby that the state of California wants you to jump on.
Yeah, I've shot a couple guns. I have a friend from Squad Ops from online, actually, that took me out and we were shooting a whole bunch of guns on his land and stuff like that. So that was awesome. Definitely a really great friend of mine, Hutch. So if he's listening or he's around, he's one of the guys that got me into a lot of the military stuff as well, and actual real world firearm stuff. Nice. Definitely living in California, it is, you know, dealing with like either featureless rifles or just the whole headache of it all. I definitely, if I was not in California, would already own like a rifle.
Sure.
I do think I'll pick up a handgun here soon. I don't know. It's been, it's money, right? It's money. So I've spent a disgusting amount of money on airsoft stuff. I've spent so much money on kit and on all that stuff that, I mean, the good thing is I spend money on real stuff, as cringe as that is. So eventually, when I do transition to real-world firearms, I'll have stuff that actually works and will hold up. But I have not yet gone and purchased my own firearm yet. Yeah, I do plan on it eventually, though.
I think, well, it's good that you're purchasing real stuff. Like, if you're going to train, you might as well, you know, do it with a real kit. Plus, it'll just last longer and treat you better in the end. No, that's awesome, man. I would love to get the chance to go to the range one day and put some rounds down range. That'd be a great time. And kind of like the last thing that I had written down here to talk to you about, was your affiliation and kind of the work that you've done over the years with Stack Up. I saw them, I think they tweeted about you like today. I don't remember when I took these. Mm-hmm. It was like semi recently. But tell me about like what you do with them and give me a chance to praise you for that work.
So yeah, I mean, last year we did a pretty big campaign for Stack Up. Recently we haven't. It's 2021 has been just, I can't believe we're at the end of 2021 already, but during COVID especially, just when everyone was at home and we were all like, we had a lot more time on our hands, I guess you could say. I was doing a lot of charity work for Stack Up, which is a veteran / active duty gaming charity, where they send out care packages to people who are out there in the field, or people who are no longer serving. But it's just been a great opportunity for me to give back, and doing charity work, I think, is something that is easy for me to do, and it helps out, you know, the people who need to be helped out. Just because, like, it's a lot of fun to do charity streams. It definitely, you know, you get to see the impact that you have, because Stack Up specifically will like show like what you've done, and they'll take pictures of the people who get care packages and stuff like that. But it's great to be able to not only be a fan of the, you know, military / veteran side of things, but actually be able to contribute in whatever small way that I can. So Stack Up's a great group of people. And yeah, it's, if you, I think you've worked with them before with some squad events as well. They're a great group of people over there. I've met Steven and a whole bunch of the guys, yeah. Dave and stuff like that. It's a good cause, and I think if there's anything, like being able to use my platform and you know, I guess my influence to not only have fun and share things that I like doing, but also to do, you know, some good, I think is important.
Yeah, I love that, dude. And it's extremely admirable that you would take something as valuable as, you know, one of your videos or one of your streams and use it to promote something like Stack Up. I think it's a cool program too. And I have spoken with them and kind of played middleman to link them up with another organization so that they could continue to spread the word and get the word out. But super cool organization. Love that you're able to support them. And I guess, like, as far as like from a content creation and just, you know, being good dude side of things, I think the most rewarding thing that I've experienced from content creation so far are guys who have reached out to me about service in the military, who've pulled the trigger on it and who are now like experiencing success in different capacities in the military. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go into like the specifics, but due to, you know, pursued some stuff in like the special operations world and we're making like pretty major decisions about their service. And at least partially making that decision informed, you know, after conversations. And so like the ability to like touch people's lives and just have a positive impact or an outreach has been extremely rewarding. And one of the reasons that I want to do stuff outside of just like making videos, like it's one of the reasons I love having a Discord server, so I have the opportunity to connect with people. It's one of the reasons that, you know, I wanted to make a podcast so we can have these conversations that hopefully, you know, reach far and wide and people can learn something from them and get something valuable out of it. And just kind of diversifying the means by which we communicate with our audiences, I think is extremely important for being able to kind of get that impact out there and support organizations like Stack Up or start conversations with people making decisions about how they choose to serve.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, there's a whole bunch of invisible impact that I think we have as well. A lot of it is, you know, we're able to entertain people, right? We bring value to people's lives via either distracting them, teaching them things, you know, it's entertaining them. I think, and I'm sure you've gotten messages as well as like, hey, you've helped me, you know, yeah, distract me from the bad times, or help me get through rough spots, or, you know, teach me this important thing, or, you know, X, Y, or Z. I think it's on top of, you know, the extra work that we go through and do. It's hard for us sometimes, just going back to the whole like virtual kind of, you know, lifestyle or experience as a content creator. It's sometimes hard to just see that measurable impact we have, both positive and negative sometimes, right? Sure. A bad take or whatever. It's a delicate line. We have a lot of, you know, influence and with that, you know, great power comes great responsibility. But it's just, it's cool seeing, how many lives we touch from sitting at home on our computers, right? It's for better or worse, it's awesome to see. And I think, you know, you most definitely have helped out, you know, those guys who are, as you said, going through that military route of life, and you have that experience. And even then, just the people who enjoy your content, it's huge. It's something that I think many people out there, you know, have who have not reached out, like, appreciate the content on the comments and just people who watch and lurk and just get value from the content is so important to, like, sit back and just recognize that those people do exist, because we would not be here without them, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I by no means am under the impression that, like, I've hit it big or anything like that, but whatever impact I'm able to have in a positive way, I'm super grateful for. And it's funny reflecting on, like, my early encounters with you. You likely don't even recall this, but I was playing in, like, I think it was, like, on a Squad Ops server. And I think, like, the first time you and I ever played together, like, I just happened to be on your server. This was a couple of years ago. And I just, like, saw that you were online, and I was like, dude, Karma Cut's actually, like, here right now. I need to get in that squad. and I did. Like, I got in that squad, and I was like, bro, I am in Karma Cut's freaking squad right now. Like, and we're just freaking, you know, we're just playing squad, having fun. I don't even remember if I made a video out of it. I probably did, since I've had the YouTube channel, like, literally forever. But, you know, I reflect on that and, like, how excited I was. And I was in my late 20s, probably, or early 30s, and I'm, like, a grown ass man. And I see this, you know, this gaming personality, like, on the internet in one of the games that I love playing. And even, like, me as a grown ass man recognizing you, getting to play with you, I was extremely excited, like, fanboy excited. And knowing that every single player that you interact with, like, on any given day, is very likely, if it's the first time they're hanging out with you, they're probably going to have a similar reaction. Like, they're probably going to be just as excited. And I think it's important to keep that perspective, that for better or worse, like, there's a population of people who are going to look up to you. And God forbid they may choose to do so of me as well, for better or worse. but like, as if we're going to put ourselves in these positions where we're going to make content, we're going to reach out and touch the lives of people, we're going to entertain people, like, one, you got to be super humble, because it doesn't matter. Like, we're just internet nerds making video game videos. So it doesn't matter. But if we are going to touch people's lives, we have the opportunity to do it in a positive way. Stay extremely humble about it and do what we can to have a positive impact. And so I think you've got that on lock with your interaction with StackUp, with the way that you approach your content, with how generous you are mentoring other content creators like me, coming on to fledgling podcasts at, 7 o'clock California time on a freaking Monday night out of nowhere on short notice. But yeah, man, I'm super, super grateful that you gave me 96 minutes of your life this evening.
Oh, no, I love being here. I always love interacting with you. I think it's literally just us both having, like, busy schedules and stuff. I think if we both had more time, we'd always be, like, gaming together and stuff like that. But it's always a good time. It's just a ton of fun. I like knowing that you're, like, in the space, and I want to see you succeed, and you just bring so much. You truly do have a unique take on content as far as what is being offered out there right now, and I love seeing it. I learn from you, like, as much as you think that you've mentored me, like, I'll take things that you know really well, and I'll actually learn a whole bunch from that. So just seeing, you know, each other, like, how much people online impact and influence and you know, spark good just by being, you know, out there and interacting with other people. That's why I love seeing that you're, like, hosting podcasts. I love seeing that you're hosting your own Discord community and stuff like that. I think it's so important, because so few creators out there will just get sucked into their own world. I know a ton of creators that don't really interact with, you know, anyone. They play their games. They don't have their communities. They just hop on, they get content, they leave. And I just know how powerful that is, because, like, even going back to, like, what started me is, like, my online gaming friends got me here, or even Dyslexy. Like, I got to meet Dyslexy at ITSEC, and I was and it's like he sparked and influenced and encouraged me to begin doing Squad Ops, which is now still around 5 years later. Wow, and what sparked a whole bunch of my content with Shack Tack and watching those videos. So that's how I know that we have so much influence, is because I came from that. That's where I'm from, is from watching guys online and just learning and wanting to do what they're doing and being influenced and, you know, subtly encouraged by these people who had the drive to take the leap, take the jump, and just do what they're doing and pull the trigger. So it's awesome to see you and Fodder and a whole bunch of all these other creators, like, actually get into the weeds and start going at it, because it's important, because you're inspiring people. And I don't, especially, I just learned this later on, but, like, earlier, it's just important to know that you have that influence and you are inspiring people. You are having a positive impact. So it's I love to see it, dude.
I appreciate it, man. Well, thanks for being so generous with your time. I am highly confident that I can convince at least 50 internet strangers to listen to this podcast episode. If they make that mistake, where can they find you?
YouTube.com/Karmica. That's where all my stuff is. Yeah.
Perfect. All right, bro. Well, I appreciate you. You're an awesome friend. And thanks for hanging out for our inaugural episode. As this thing crashes and burns over the next year, we'll reflect fondly on this moment. And yeah, man, I'll catch you next time.
Anytime. Thanks so much for having me.
See you, brother.
See you.
And cut. Thanks, man. That was sick.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.